Okay, final hour now with Lynn Marzulli as we talk about these incredible UFO cases that he has chronologically put together in the alien interviews, his work. And we'll be back. We'll take your phone calls with him next on Coast to Coast AM. Lynn, before you tell us where we can pick up the alien interviews again, you were saying one more thing to think about.
Well, let me see. The one more thing might be this, that if we go back into antiquity and we look at the stories of revolving about, if I say the name Jesus, immediately everybody goes, oh. But if I say Yeshua, which is what his Hebrew name is, and let's go back and look at the Shroud of Turin, and if that truly is the calling card, so to speak, of an event, a very unbelievable supernatural event, then we need to at least travel on this a little bit, look at it and examine it, and not and strip all the religion that the religious nonsense that's accumulated over the centuries, over the last two millennia, that surrounds this, which in my opinion obfuscates what the real deal is. Here's the thing. That when apparently whenever he was walking around the planet, he would heal people. For instance, if you were blind, born blind with no eyes, he would come up, and this is what the stories say. Let's just travel in the story, strip it down, walk through the story. And he would go up and he would touch that person, sometimes spit into the ground, make like clay, what the heck is that about, rub it on the man's eyes, and all of a sudden, born blind from birth, the man sees. How is he doing that? What's he manipulating?
Right.
What's inherent in him that's enabling him to somehow manipulate things on the cellular level so that this man grows eyes? Because that's what he's doing. What about the 10 lepers who were, you know, leprosy in the ancient world was literally a death sentence. I mean, you just watched your flesh rot away over a period of years and then you died. So 10 lepers are instantly cured of their disease, which begs the question, how is he doing this thing? How is he manipulating down to the cellular, down to the molecular level of each person where their body is somehow instantly restored? That's flipping amazing to me. I mean, when I read that stuff, it just goes, whoa, what's he doing here? And what happens when we find out from the stories, apparently, listen to this, after the resurrection, when he appears, these guys, his followers, are up in this room, and they're scared. They don't know what's going on. They don't know whether he's, you know, risen from the dead or whatever. And all of a sudden, he just walks through the wall and manifests in front of them. And at first, they go, oh, my gosh, it's a ghost. There's that fear factor again,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
It's a ghost. And then he goes, no, I'm not a ghost. Touch me, handle me. Sits down and have some food. I just love that. What do you guys got to eat? I mean, you know, you got to
calm them down, right?
Calm them down. What do you guys got to eat? They have some fish, and then he talks about it. And then he vanishes back through the wall. What happens in the abduction phenomena? What are we looking at? What are these creatures? What are the properties that they have that are inherent to them? Don't we hear that abductees are allegedly floated through walls, floated through glass? How is that possible? These creatures, these entities, have the similar properties to what Yeshua has, only Yeshua is greater.
Good
and that's
point.
Why when we evoke his name, that's why the results are what Joe Jordan pointed out, what happened to Lawrence Gray and other people. That's what I've come to the conclusions.
How do we find the alien interviews, the book? The
best place is my new website, which is lamarzulli.net, lamarzulli.
Ah, okay. Let's make sure we link that.
Spiral Life links to it, too, but it's lamarzulli.net. We've got a coast-to-coast special. You can get everything I've ever written for $35. But the cool thing about the alien interviews is it's a web book. So when you pay the $5.99, you get a you're on PayPal and you switch and you go back and hit a link and it's right there. You download it on your computer. It's an ebook. It's so interactive. It's got tons of links, tons of videos. It's really a fun book. And the interviews, in my opinion, are just really riveting. I mean, some of these people that they're just very candid and it's just really neat.
Okay, let's go to the phones. You ready, Lynn?
I certainly am, sir.
Santa Rosa, California. First caller is David on the wildcard line. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. This is the first time I've called, and there's two things that are so important, and I'll try to say them as quickly as possible if you'll just allow me the opportunity to do that. And
sure.
And the first one was that I went in for an MRI, and that was for a migraine headache, and the MRI must have taken where I was in the machine for 30 to 45 minutes. And And I came out of the MRI feeling just a little bit off kilter. And that night, and this is, I'm not making any of this up, that night at about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, I opened my eyes and I saw what almost looked like a shimmering sand that was starting to form a shape. And as it was, and the more I watched this, the more dread I had. And finally, I raised my voice to where I was screaming, and my wife woke me up because I knew if whatever was coalescing or coming together had formed, I was going to be going someplace. Mm. And this is the only, I've never had an experience like that. But I am absolutely sure it had something to do with the MRI. And then the second thing I wanted to say, and then I'll get off the line so I could just listen to you talk about this, is in 2003, I was going from Santa Rosa to Long Beach, and I was on Highway 5, and at about 2:30 in the morning, as I was headed south, my son and I were in the car, and we saw something just, you know, that was a little bit of a distance that we thought was an airplane, but it became very clear it wasn't an airplane. As we continued to travel, and it came closer and closer, and as it became closer and closer, we could see that where there would be wings, we couldn't see any wings, but at the wing tips, and again, I know I sound like a nut saying this, but this is the absolute God's honest truth, but believe me, please. And there were two orbs where the wing tips would be, and then, you know, to get any questions of, you know, perception and where the sky was or where the moon was, this thing crossed right over us, over the top of the car, and then the grade dropped off on the other side of the road. Now, if this had been a movie, and because this is what it felt like after it was pitch black, we continued driving, and then as I'm looking further down toward the horizon, I can start to see light, you know, where the grade is starting to come back up to the road, and as the car is moving forward, the light is now approaching the road from below grade, but that light is getting lighter and lighter, and at the exact point where it was at its brightest, this whatever it was crossed right over the top of us again, and my son and I were just stunned. And to this day, first of all, I tell the story and people's eyes kind of roll, and it made no sound. It moved in ways that, it moved in ways that an FAA would certainly not allow an aircraft to move that close to the ground.
Right.
And
sure.
And I'll hang up now, and I would just love to hear your take on both of these incidents and to help me keep my sanity. Thank you.
Well, the important thing, I think, Lynn, just to help him keep his sanity, is that whatever he saw, a lot of people have seen similar things. And they're not nuts.
Exactly. And notice how immediately, because of the conditioning, the cultural conditioning, he starts making excuses. I'm not crazy. I swear to God, this is what I saw. There's an earnestness there. There's a believability. I think just from hearing the man talk on the phone, he's one of, like, by now, tens of thousands who have had close encounters. Look, I saw something when I was 11 years old at Boy Scout camp. I mean, I was with four other guys. I've told this story before. Looked up, saw this UFO, classic disc, blue sky, just sitting there, sunlight glinting off this thing. It takes off straight up in the air in a blink of an eye, and it's gone. We go running back. We tell the story. By 5 o'clock that night, the other three boys have recanted what they've seen because of the ridicule. And it was my first lesson in herd mentality. So, David, you're not alone. I just told you that I saw one when I was 11, and I don't think I'm crazy, although other people I'm sure would differ with that. With the MRI deal, I don't think the two things are connected at all. I could be wrong. I think something else was happening. It might be coincidental that you were there, that this thing began to manifest the day of the MRI, but I don't think they're connected. I think this is in my opinion, some sort of a spiritual thing. Something was opened up. You opened up something, perhaps, that allowed something to start to manifest. And when you said no, it left.
Let's go to Simi Valley, California. Cynthia, you're with us. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi.
How close did those fires get to you, by the way?
traveled around Simi Valley, but not in Simi Valley.
Okay, good. All right, go ahead, Cynthia.
Back in 1957, my mother woke the entire family up, hollering at my dad that there was a tall, over 7 foot, skinny man, all white, no bigger around than a Schwinn bicycle, standing in the bedroom. And she talked about this down through the years. My aunt insisted when she was a little girl that she had seen the Easter Bunny, and clear up to almost the day she died, she swore in a stack of Bibles that she saw something tiny like the Easter Bunny. Well, just before my mother died, I had given her Whitley Strieber's book.
Communion?
Yeah, Communion. It had the picture of the alien on the front of it.
Right.
And she said, "That's my skinny white man."
Oh, boy.
Now, she read the book, and she asked me afterwards if I thought it would be all right if she wrote Whitley to tell him not to worry, that they wouldn't hurt him. And I asked her, I said, "Well, how do you know they won't hurt him?" And she looked at me, and she said, "Because they've never hurt any of us." Now, I've since then talked to Alex Collier. I think you're familiar with him. And he said that the being that my mother described was the Aetheans, and that they're part of the elder race, and that they do not work in the aspect of harming humans. So my question is, in your book, do you cover any of the races that are not harmful to humans?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and it's loaded with all sorts of conjecture. In other words, people that claim that there's like 56 races or whatever on the planet and manifesting, I take a different tack with that. And what I believe is that these entities are shape-shifting. They can appear as whatever they want to appear, which is why there's such a multitude of witnesses where they were short, they were tall, they were, you know, they were insectoid, they were reptilian, all these different manifestations of the same thing. They can shapeshift, I believe. They can disguise themselves as angels of light if they so choose to, which is why, you know, Jacques Vallée calls it messengers of deception.
Exactly.
So I don't think that this tall gray fellow, even though he didn't manifest or do any harm that you're aware of, there's too many other cases. Specifically with, and look, I've talked to some of these people who now believe that they're benevolent. But in order to do that, I have found this over and over again. They have thrown out their concept of what good and evil is. In order to embrace the so-called benevolent alien agenda, you have to leave your brain at the door and throw out anything that you think about what is good or right or wrong, good or evil. That's what I've discovered.
Okay, next up, let's go, John, in Keene, New Hampshire, east of the Rockies. Hey, John, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for having me on. I'm actually a first-time caller, but I can't make a long-distance call on my phone, so
that's
I use
okay.
1-800, you know.
You're fine, that's right.
Well, you've really led up to my question, and also you made some comments which are important about people leaving their brain at the door. I don't feel that I've done that, but, you know, my question is, I see where you're going with this. You know, I've studied the Book of Enoch, et cetera, that, you know, essentially what we have here is potentially fallen angels and so on and so forth. But is it possible, my question is it possible that people could be abducted by, you know, benevolent, you know, good aliens, if you will? And, you know, I've never called before, but I was taken when I was 9 years old, and I don't necessarily want to get into that, but...
If you want to email me, if you want to talk about it off the air, we can...
Yeah, I don't really want to be famous yet, but I can tell you my experience, you know, it just dwarfs everything I've heard, and, you know, it would be a show unto itself, you know. The real story is not even what happened to me, but what has happened to me since, you know. My life has been unbelievable. But so I've tried to make sense of this, and I haven't ruled out any possibility. Now, just to back to my question, I've always instinctively sensed that, you know, what happened to me was not bad. There were bad elements to it, but not... wasn't a bad experience. I wasn't afraid. There was no, nobody did weird sexual things to me or anything like that. But I don't know. I mean, I'm also open. I mean, anything's possible, you know. So I just wondered if I could have your take on it, you know.
Well, again, I think we need to strip it down and just look at what the phenomena is. You were taken against your will. You were a child. That's kidnapping. In any country on this planet, that's kidnapping. If you tell me, if you come from 50 gazillion light years away, you know, you're going to, and you study this culture for any length of time, you know, if you're that intelligent, you're going to know that this is a no-no. You're not going to start abducting people against their will or kidnapping nine-year-olds. It's just, you know, those are criminal acts that are punishable in every single culture on this planet. It's cross-cultural, all through history. You don't do stuff like that. So, you know, it's there's an element here to me which just, it always goes back to the same deal. There's a malevolent element which overrides any type of benevolence that, you know, people come away with or may want to attribute to these entities.
Okay, thanks for that. Jason in Lansing, Michigan, you're up with L.A. Marzulli. Hey, Jason.
Hi, Jason.
Hey, great show, George.
Thank you.
And thanks for taking my call.
L.A. Makes it that way. Go ahead.
I just had a suggestion. That lady that was abducted and had, like, nine witnesses,
mm-hmm.
Is there any way that maybe you guys could try to get her on the show?
You know, I don't know if she's been on the show before.
No, I mean, is there any way you could get her to get on the show? Like, maybe get in contact with her? And
I'm sure we can try, Lynn, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Will she talk?
Yeah. Sure.
Absolutely. We'll try it.
And also, the pictures of the hybrid,
mm-hmm.
Where can I find those at?
The best place to get is, it's actually in the Alien Interview book.
Okay.
It's like a $6 download. You could look at it in the next 10 minutes if you downloaded the book.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
It is a bizarre picture, Lynn.
Yeah, it is.
Michael in Atlanta, Georgia, you are on the air with us. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. I am honored and thrilled. I'm a first-time caller, and George, this is the best show I've ever heard that you've had, L.A.
Wow, thank you. Appreciate that.
I want to almost get down on my knees and just thank you and thank you and thank you. When I was 12, I saw my first UFO. I was living in the country with my folks and stuff, and we were in the woods. I mean, nothing around us, so my bedroom was actually the living room. I was crawling into my bed underneath the picture window, and a UFO came flying across our front yard, about 20 feet from me, about 6 feet off the ground, a beautiful thing, going straight to the woods. I ran over to the other window. It was gone. So I knew UFOs were real, and I became a Christian 6 years later, and I was trying to figure out how the two things fit. And I just want to say that I've come to the same conclusions that you have, which is great for me. I mean, you already knew it, but the fact of what these actually are, I think the deception is a little bit more than what you think it is. And I'm not going to get into it now. Too many other people on the line.
Shoot me an email. Yeah.
I'm going to shoot you an email. But the good and bad aliens, I heard the other lady talking about a moment ago. My thought is like good cops, bad cops. When they're playing, they're still cops.
That's an interesting theory. Got to take this break. Lynn will be right back with you. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, anniversary of the death of Elvis Presley, his birthday, the Elvis conspiracy. That's our next program on Coast to Coast AM. George Norrie back at you with Lynn Marzulli and your phone calls, and let's go right back to him. Seattle, Washington. Garth, take it away.
Hi, George. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, Garth. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good. But my question concerns faster-than-light travel and how it might affect the aging process and also the spiritual ramifications, because we know that time slows down the closer you get to speed of light. Would it reverse faster-than-light, reversing the aging process, and if this allows space travel over billions of miles, mm-hmm. would it also rot people spiritually on the vine? And would it also be the reason that the government wants to cover up faster night travel? Because if everybody knew they could get younger getting on these ships, you know, there would be chaos.
I love that.
That's a good one. It's my understanding of that according to Einstein, that you can never go faster than light. Now that's the physics that we know. When you move into other physics, that certainly might be possible. So good stuff there.
I think they're going to learn things about the space, Lynn, that they have never even contemplated. You know what? Next up, let's go to Bobby. You are on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bobby.
Hi, George. I love your spirit. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Bobby. How you doing?
Good. My story's too long to tell on the air, but I'd just like to, you know, synopsis it a little bit. When I was 17, which was in 1969, I ran away from home, and I got involved deeply into the occult, and I got involved in a coven. And during a ceremony, the energy in the room got so thick that it got black with all the lights on. It was like a buzzing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a guy in the room that I watched shapeshift into like a half-human, half-beast thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there were three other people in the room that spoke with one voice. Three mouths were moving, but they spoke with one voice. Mm-hmm. And this thing scared me so bad that I ran across the country and it for years. And this entity, whatever it was, followed me.
Mm.
And I came to the end of my rope, and I called out to Jesus, which I didn't believe in Jesus, but and I don't know why I called out to him. But I called out to him, and the room lit up like daylight, and he walked in, and he changed my life. And, I've had many miracles in my life since, but I went from dark to light in a period of from 1969 to 1976.
Mm, very interesting.
And my question is, do you think these entities are extraterrestrial?
No, definitely not. I think they're interdimensional. I think that the entities that we're dealing with are very similar to the entities that you conjured up. It's all the same deal. You know, I've also experienced many, many years ago the same type of a thing where we did a seance and we called up Ashtaroth, and it was like broad daylight when we did this thing. It was three of us in the room, and literally the wall next to us, there was like a black hole that appeared in this thing. So, you know, we all freaked. I mean, we had no idea what we were doing. We're just kids. And
yeah.
This thing started manifesting, and it was just absolutely terrifying. We all, you know, ran out of the room and stuff, so.
Yeah, the wall was actually breathing.
Mm-hmm.
In the first experience. But this thing followed me. I mean, it jumped from people to people. I could get on a bus and somebody would look at me, and I would recognize it.
What's interesting though is that you were able to call out the name of Jesus in a non-religious, you know, format. There was nobody telling you what to do. You weren't in a building. You just called out.
Right.
And that's and all of a sudden, you know, you got relief. And that's the whole point of where I'm coming from. That's the paradigm that I operate in.
Yeah. Well, he definitely saved my life, and I've had many miracles since. My husband was healed of a terminal brain tumor and many, many, many other things. All my friends told me I should write a book.
That's great, Bobby.
Okay. Thanks, Bobby.
Uh-huh.
Appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go to Omaha, Nebraska. Bob, it's your turn.
Good morning, George. Good morning, Lynn.
Morning, guys.
Absolutely fascinating show. And I'm a first-time caller, and actually it's the very first time I've dialed this number, George, and I got right through.
Perfect, wow. Bob.
I was just saying, I find it so fascinating that ever since about the Thanksgiving era, you have been more and more, your shows have been turning more towards the alien knowledge that we have on our planet, and whether or not the government is going to solidify everyone's knowledge that there actually are, you know, alien beings on our planet, and whether they're going to come out and actually say, yes, we have proof, this is going to happen, blah, blah, blah. Well, it's really fascinating here because we have running commercials on the radio station here of a new university that's opening up here. And it's called the University of Seven Stars. And it is actually a university you can get a degree in very broad topics, such as not just astrology, but astrology, alien, I don't want to say encounters, but sort of like an alien theory type thing. And it's really fascinating because everybody thinks that Obama's going to come out after he takes the oath and come out and say, okay, yes, we do have evidence of this. And this college's first day of classes is January 19th.
They're going to get a jump start on the inauguration.
Well, I mean, it's just weird because, you know, I've been listening to your show, George, for like about a year and a half, and I absolutely love it. I listen to it every single night. Just because I work 7 days a week and I'm a baker, so I'm up all night. But, you know, more and more we have been getting into this alien subject and whether or not this is all going to be brought out. And I just find it absolutely fascinating that all of this stuff is actually like coming to a head.
I think so, too. Let me just comment on that. I believe that the currency of these entities is fear. They move in fear. And so in the book that precedes the alien interviews is called Politics, Prophecy, and the Supernatural. There's a whole idea. This is based on ancient manuscripts and prophecy, which is about 2,600-year-old. Without getting long-winded, the bottom line is there's going to be an unbelievable war in the Middle East. It'll be between certain countries which will go up against Israel, similar to what we're seeing now, except this will be an overwhelming confederacy which will attack simultaneously. Israel will resort to what's known as the Samson option, which, in other words, they're going to use their nukes. This fulfills the prophecy of Ezekiel 38:39, 2,600-year-old prophecy. This war, with the exchange of nuclear weapons, will create a climate of fear on this planet, literally, which is unprecedented. We've never seen anything even remotely close to what this thing is going to happen, in my opinion. And if that happens, that's when we'll see the revealing, because they'll move in that climate of fear. Fear is the currency. They always, the whole point of the 2 hours was to talk about that. All these witnesses have this sense of being overwhelmed. There's a lot of fear, a lot of malevolence, in my opinion. So that's a scenario. Is it the scenario? Don't know, but it's based on, you know, lots of research.
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of always tend to think a little bit outside the box. I mean, you know, to give you an example, the first stock I ever bought was I was thinking of, okay, well, I'm going to buy into a casket company because all of the baby boomers are dying off. You know, who thinks about that kind of stuff? But I guess my thought train goes towards on the other side, you know, not necessarily us being fearful of them. I honestly think, you know, what if they're afraid of us doing something wrong? What if this is the planet that they are actually looking at to come and put put their civilization back into gear, or move from one galaxy to another one, and this is the planet that they're choosing, and they're afraid that we're going to screw it all up before they get here.
Well, I mean, that's conjecture, and that's a certainly a possible scenario, and that's an opinion, and it's just as valid as any other opinion out there. It's not an opinion that I, you know, my research would not, you know, dovetail into that. I wouldn't embrace that because my research is pointing exactly the opposite direction, which we just spent, you know, the last couple of hours talking about. So we just different opinion. That's fine.
All right, let's take some more calls. Spartanburg, South Carolina. William, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing today?
Good, thanks.
Hey, William. Hello, Lynn. I haven't asked a question, and it's a little hard on me, but I guess I just need to come clean on it and ask the question. When I was 12 years old, I was watching some, I'm 31 now. This would have been back in the late 80s. I was watching this alien show. It was a... It was one of the first shows that came out in the late 80s about aliens and abductions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were talking about some woman predicting that in 2001, aliens would land on the planet and they would come and grant us benevolency and all this other mess. And I used to kind of laugh. And immediately after that, they showed a picture of the grave. And I just went into a full-bore panic. I wasn't screaming or anything, but I just saw that picture, and all of a sudden, I just had to leave the room. I had to run. I had to hide. I went into the kitchen, and I'm literally hiding behind the table. Then I went back into my room, and I'm hiding in my room. And my brother is like, what's wrong with you, man? You freaking out. And I'm like, dude, I can't look at that picture. I can't look at that picture. And ever since then, I've had that problem of if I look at those pictures or at those beings or whatever on television before I go to sleep, I'm always worried I'm going to have nightmares about that mess. So I just, you know, kind of avoid it. So I'm wondering, where did I get this from? It's trying to make me wonder about myself. I don't think I've been abducted, but, you know, you never know.
You never know. What do you think, Lynn?
Well, without further, you know, sitting down and talking about it and probing a little further, and I don't mean that in a literal sense.
Nice.
No pun intended here. You know, we'd have to email me off, you know, shoot me an email. I mean, go to my website, shoot me an email, and let's talk a little bit more about it. Hard to say. The fact that you had that kind of a reaction is a signal to me, at any rate, that, you know, you may have had an encounter and you just don't remember it. But, you know, that's speculation on my part. But it is kind of bizarre that you, you know, have that kind of a severe reaction upon seeing a picture of a gray. So something to consider. You know, look, I don't know what your religious beliefs are or what you believe or, you know, what your worldview is. But if something happens again, I would, you know, shoot me an email and I'll tell you how to get rid of the thing if you're interested.
Let's go to Ron, who's driving around in Ohio in the wee hours. Go ahead, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, Ron.
Good morning.
I got two questions, actually, about the Shroud of Turin. First question is, what is the Vatican's official position on the Shroud of Turin?
The first question, the short answer to that is the Vatican doesn't say that it's authentic, or they don't deny that it's not authentic. They just, there it is. So they're very ambivalent.
All right. And the second question, have you ever heard the theory or did any research on the accusation that the Shroud of Turin is actually the shroud that was laid over the last Grand Master of the Knights Templar, Jacques de Molay?
Yeah, I've heard that whole thing, and you know, it just doesn't hold any water. The shroud, for instance, there's a face cloth called the Sudarium of Oviedo, which is in Spain, and they can trace that back to the 6th century. And here's the deal: in Jewish burial, probably when they took the body off the cross, they wrapped the head in this face cloth, all right? And because anything that touched blood in Jewish tradition, anything that blood would touch, they would bury it with the person. So when they took the face cloth and they laid the body in the tomb, they laid the face cloth next to the shroud, all right? So it doesn't have the same picture or the phenomena that's indigenous to the shroud. What it does have, which is bizarre, is about 100 points of congruency between the Shroud of Turin face. When you take the cloth and overlay it on the face, you see that at one point in time, this not only the shroud, but this cloth were on the same body. And that's really bizarre. So it dates it back to the, you know, without any carbon dating. When you take those two artifacts and put them together, you can link it directly to the 6th century, which is, you know, another 600 years before Jacques de Molay. So there you go.
All right, I appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay, next up, let's go to Alan in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Take it away. Go ahead, Alan.
Hello. Wow, it's such a privilege to be able to speak with you both.
Hey, Alan.
I actually, in listening here, I've been kind of intrigued with the age connection of all these people. They're all getting their experiences around, you know, 10, 11, 12, and I'm mm-hmm. just curious about that. Because I also have had an experience, and it was around the same age. And my experience has to do with a cattle mutilation and abduction. I was actually exploring through the woods, and I found this cow. And what was weird was right before that, I had been standing in the same spot, and the cow wasn't there. Mm. But I had heard something in the woods, and there was just this overwhelming feeling of, like, I don't know, fear and evil that was mm-hmm. going on around, and I ran, mm-hmm. and I thought that there was something running after me, and when I came back, there was this cow lying where I had been standing.
Wow.
And I was just wondering if there are other people that have experienced, you know, being in the vicinity or in the region of a cattle mutilation, when this occurs, I looked at the cow afterwards, and it, you know, it had all the telltale signs, if you will. But at that point in my life, I had never even heard of a cattle mutilation.
Well, you know, the people that I've spoken to that have seen this and been up close and personal to it, you know, Chuck, both of these guys, they had the feeling that they were being watched. They were very uneasy. Not all the time, but there were cases where they felt like they were being watched. They felt uneasy. They felt, you know, like some sort of a presence that was there, but they couldn't see it. Troubled. I mean, the horse is shying away from it. It's just, again, if I talk about the first hour, I call it psychic residue from these entities. That's what they leave behind. Wickedness, evil, it's all part of the same thing.
Lynn, what are you working on now?
I'm actually, this is leading me down into this whole idea of exploring angelic visitations in other cultures. So it, because, you know, different people in different places in different centuries have had so-called angelic encounters. And so what I'm trying to do is research that in different texts. Certainly the Quran, for instance, has references to angels. Most cultures have references to demons, to angels, helpers, this type of a thing. So, again, I'm trying to draw it back and do research and parallel it to the UFO phenomena that's happening.
Well, you do a great job in your research, Lynn. You really do. And take care of yourself. One more quick time about the book, The Alien Interviews. How do you get it?
LAMarzulli.net, LAMarzulli.net. It's $5.99, $6. It's just a happy, interactive book, tons of websites, lots of things. You can download it and get it instantly tonight. So it's $5.99. We also have a co-special, all the books I've written for $35. So
you got it. Great. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks,
once again.
George. Appreciate it.
For Kara Scoburn, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Alan Tazinski, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasour, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.